This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. Good evening. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our website on the peoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to live shows or to our past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. And if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. Just go to the website for details. Our guests tonight are husband and wife Adam Shapiro and Hawaida Adaf. Hawaida and Adam are co-founders of the International Solidarity Movement, a pro-Palestinian organization that's stated mission of which it is to bring civilians from around the world to resist nonviolently the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and previously the Gaza Strip. Hi, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Basma.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Haven't seen you around Michigan for a while, Adam. We're looking forward to your next visit here, you and Hawaida.
Thank you.
Now, boy, I hear you've had some interesting experiences lately. What was it? You were on the ship, the Spirit of Humanity, entering from Cyprus into Gaza. Can you tell us what the full purpose of that trip was, Adam?
Sure. The trip was part of the efforts of the Free Gaza Movement, of which Hueda is one of the key organizers. And Free Gaza has been working since last year to try to break the siege, the legal siege that Israel is imposing on Gaza. And so this was actually the eighth trip, and there were 21 from, I think, 12 nations on board the ship, taking with us a few tons of mainly symbolic amount of materials, but we were bringing building supplies. I've even had a little bit of cement with us. Things that are banned from entering the Gaza Strip. Israel bans these items as part of its blockade. We were bringing in as a sort of a symbolic effort in what we were hoping and planning was going to be the just sort of the start of then escalation, bringing more and more goods into Gaza. We were out at sea for at least 12 hours before the Israelis first made contact with us in international waters in the middle of the night. A couple of their warships shining their high beam lights at the ship and making contact with us on our radio, ordering us to turn around. Of course, we refused and continued on our way, and then another some hours later, on June 30th, in the afternoon, the Israelis surrounded us with, at this point, eight of their warships, eventually sending four high-speed, what are called Zodiac speedboats, after us, catching up to us, and eventually they boarded our ship. I don't even know how many commandos there were in the took the ship and dragged us to the Israeli port of Ashdod, at which point we were all arrested and we weren't charged, but basically we were being held for entering Israel illegally. And then after about 8 days in jail in detention, I and the others, we were all deported out to our countries of origin, again, for entering Israel illegally, which is interesting. basically we were being kicked out for entering Israel at Ashdod port, essentially by virtue of their kidnapping us from international waters. And dragging us to an Israeli port, we were then punished for entering that port illegally.
So the boat was in international waters, in fact.
Yeah, as far as we can, I mean, the boat was in an area of waters that was certainly not in Israeli waters. We were crossing from international waters into, headed toward Gazan waters off the coast of Gaza. There is a bit of uncertainty as to whether this water constitutes Israeli waters or Palestinian territorial waters, or I don't know, maybe Loretta can explain it better since she's a lawyer, but as far as I understand, we were nowhere near Israeli waters, and as far as I know, we were in international waters.
And may I ask you, there were prior reports that let not only the media know, but others know, including Israel, that this trip was going to take place on the Spirit of Humanity.
Oh, so
it wasn't a secret.
There wasn't a secret. The boat itself was inspected at the Cypriot port of Larnaca, which is where we took off from. These are EU inspectors, and they check the ships. They, you know, log it in their registry that this boat heading out. We had the press release at the port. It was in Associated Press, and even before that, we had announced on our website and to the world that the ship was going to be headed towards Gaza. This is in fact part of the strategy that we're not trying to sneak in, and nor should there be a need to sneak into Palestinian territories. It should be open to the world, and Palestinians should have the right to come and go as they please. And so, and certainly welcome anybody who wants to come or bring things to them. So, this absolutely was not, hidden or obscured from anybody's view at any time.
Now, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney and Nobel Peace Laureate Mary McGuire was also on the boat?
That's right. They were also on the boat. They were also detained and also spent a little bit more than a week in detention, the rest of us. as she said, upon her release and let everybody know that after they told her that she wouldn't be welcome back in Israel, that the countries she's now allowed into are North Korea, Zimbabwe, and Israel. It's quite a list that Israel finds itself in company with.
Really, very interesting. Now, let me ask you, who sponsored this humanitarian trip?
Well, in terms of the trip and in general, in terms of Free Gaza, it's a grassroots independent movement and effort. They raise money and have been raising money from individuals, namely around the world. It's not sponsored by any government or any sort of, there's no foundation or organization that's behind it. It's Free Gaza is independent and really an effort of civilians, international civilians from around the world to come together and challenge Israel on its illegal blockade of Gaza.
Unbelievable. What is it like in an Israeli jail? Adam, if I'm not mistaken, this isn't the first time you've been in one.
This is not the first time, it's true. Because I'm a foreigner, it's not that we were detained for formally charged even with a crime of any kind. We're held in a detention center that is mainly for illegal immigrants or illegal migrants or those who've overstayed their visas. So for one thing, we weren't put with, of course, the thousands of Palestinian prisoners who are mainly, mostly not charged with anything and who are for the most part political prisoners. And whose conditions of detention are far worse than anything I experienced. But I really can't complain in any way. nobody should be detained for trying to uphold international law. But the conditions of our detention truly were minimal in terms of what we had to endure, which basically was just sort of, you know, lack of freedom of movement, compared to what Palestinians endure in Israeli prisons, which include, of course, torture and all kinds of degrading and dehumanizing treatment.
Well, we do have a few questions from our listeners, and I'll be asking them in just a minute. But there are a couple of other questions that I'd one of the things that we question is the conditions of Gaza and the people of Gaza. Who is getting into Gaza? Is there, what kind of humanitarian services and aid is being? I mean, obviously there's some, from my understanding, but again, the limitations are unbelievable. The restrictions are unbelievable. So who's allowed to get in there and who isn't?
As far as I know, the primary organization that is allowed to bring goods and supplies into Gaza is UNRWA, the United Nations agency that's tasked with providing food and other relief services, humanitarian services, to the Palestinian refugees, although I think by all accounts UNRWA services now are extending beyond refugees in Gaza. But that said, no matter what is allowed in, it's far insufficient to meet the need. And UNRWA has been quite open about that. And then secondly, anything that's allowed in, of course, it still has to comply or has to abide by the list of items that Israel permits. And that list is something that changes, I think, almost on a daily basis. They never sort of keep the list fixed so that it's a guessing game constantly, which of course leads to delays and uncertainties about what items are allowed. And secondly, that list, I think nowadays, is something like 300 and some odd approved items, down from something like 4,000 from January 2006, which of course was when the siege or the blockade started in full effect. And even that number, 4,000, some of it down from what had previously been from the beginning of the Intifada. I mean, people have to understand that what's allowed or permitted into Gaza is not something new that Israel started with this siege that it's put on. The siege is just the worst conditions and the tightest control that Israel has had over Gaza. But Israel has always controlled what has been allowed in or out of Gaza. This should be seen as a continuation of its occupation policies. Of course, it's far worse than anything they've done so far, but it is occupation, it is a continuation of its policies, and therefore, we shouldn't imagine or pretend that Israel doesn't occupy Gaza just because it doesn't have settlers in Gaza anymore. It does control the entire territory, and therefore, because it has effective control of the territory, it continues to occupy it.
Very interesting. You're, as a filmmaker, one of the things that we were supplied with when we set up the interview with you in Hawaii, and for those of you that haven't seen it, it is on the People Speak website. That's just go to the www.thepeoplespeakradio.net, and when you go to read more in the section that tells of Hawaii and Adam's work, you can see a video. Now, let me ask you: you're a filmmaker. Is this your filming, Adam?
No, it's not. Unfortunately, it's another filmmaker who is on board. I was documenting. I was filming the trip, including the moment that our ship was boarded, and they came after me first. I was sort of right near the wheelhouse of the ship, And that's where the first place that the soldiers went. And so they came after me first because I had the camera, accosted me, to start hitting me and punching me or whatever to get me to release the camera. And ultimately, overpowered, and they did. And my footage was confiscated. But in the meantime, while that was happening, the other people who were filming on board had the opportunity to sort of do what they could to hide tapes in order to get them that we were able to smuggle out, basically.
I know that most of you were returned to wherever your ports of call were via land or air. What happened to the boat?
The boat remained in Ashdod port. It is still held. The boat is owned by a Greek, one of the members of the group, a Greek citizen, and therefore the boat is registered in Greece. So the Greek government has launched and filed a complaint with Israel and demanded that the boat be returned. But it is still being held. So what happened, we heard that some of the goods that were on the boat were supposedly delivered to Gaza, but we don't know what happened to some of the other items on the boat, including toys.
But of course, I'm sure it was Israel that told you that, and then we all know how credible they are.
Well, no, we did receive confirmation from people in Gaza that some of the items were delivered, but again, the toys that we had gotten for children seem to have disappeared. We don't know. Toys apparently are not allowed into Gaza.
Okay.
Otherwise, the boat remains in Israeli hands.
Right. You know, we have a couple of questions for you before I go to speak to Hawaida. And John in the USA asked two questions, Adam. He asked, why doesn't Adam's organization advertise on CNN? That's number one. If you'd like to answer that, please do.
why don't we advertise on CNN is a good question, and mainly related to funding. So if John or anyone listening is interested, certainly go to the website freegaza.org and donate to help support our efforts. Right now, our main effort in fundraising is to actually purchase a cargo ship because we do want to escalate the efforts against to break the siege, and that requires moving beyond taking symbolic aid towards bringing in the quantities that can make a difference that people can start rebuilding with.
And John's other question was, why isn't the mainstream media covering your organization's exposure of the injustices perpetrated against the Palestinians? That's a $64 question.
An ongoing and long-term question. It's a really good question. I will say this. We did see, and I think it's in part thanks to the efforts that we've made, there was, I think, quite a bit of coverage of our ship and the fact that we were in prison. Part of that, of course, has to do with the fact that certain high-profile people were on board, and as you mentioned, Cynthia McKinney and Lillian McGuire, and that also is part of our strategy to get attention, is to bring those kinds of people. There was an article in the New York Times, which I think is significant. Granted, it was a one-time article, and wasn't followed up, which is unfortunate. But there was interest that CNN has been on board one of the previous ships, as has the BBC and other major media. I would say the bigger story, of course, is not our ships, but what's happening to the people of Gaza.
Exactly.
And that should be covered far more extensively than it has been. I think the media has been complacent and worse, of course, than complacent in terms of its unwillingness to get to the story, which is the suffering of the people in Gaza and explaining exactly that this is a result of the brutal siege and ongoing occupation policies. We are getting CNN International, and we see that, I don't know if this is going to be on in the United States, But I guess it's Friday, not to do any advertising for it, but CNN is running a program by Christiane Amanpour looking at children, looking at the role of, or the, sort of like looking at how the future for children in Gaza and Afghanistan, and looking at the role of Islam or Islamic movement, I should probably say, in terms of the future of these children. And it's just, she can make an expose or not an expose, but more of a kind of sensationalist type of story about and get into Gaza and look at the
Hello, Adam.
20 pregnant women and those kinds of things.
I see. You know, Adam, for me, I think that, as you said earlier, it was almost a symbolic effort, this trip. And part of the symbolism is to show the world exactly that what happened, that there is no sanctity in honoring anything humanitarian, whether it was a humanitarian effort, the kindness of the American people in the fact that they arrested their an ex-congresswoman, that nothing is really international waters, the violation of international waters, the boarding of your ship, the arresting of people that have openly declared that they were there, they were unarmed, they were civilians, and they were absolutely posed no threat to Israel. I think that's the key right there, that you and Hawaii and the people that were on board there personified what is happening, that how rights can be stripped and violated from you no matter who you are. So if this is happening to American Congress people, peace activists, Peace Prize laureates, what's happening to the people they perceive as their enemy? This is just an amazing, amazing situation.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right, and that does beg the question, and yet it's true that our, you know, mainly the United States mainstream media fails to ask these questions and to probe deeper. But we keep pushing, and, you know, you can't give up, and you have to keep working on it, we are hoping that in our future trips, you know, perhaps we'll have a New York Times journalist on board with us, and that they also, you know, next time if Israel does gain people on board, they'll also be gaining a New York Times journalist. We're working on that. So, but certainly your listeners can help by calling their local media, letting them know, or the national media in the United States, and letting them know that you expect coverage of these kinds of stories, of what's happening in Gaza, and of Israel's policy there.
I really appreciate that, and as you heard, you do have an impact wherever you are in the world. Please write someone, write your Congress, write representatives, the members of Parliament, wherever you happen to be in the world. They need to know how the world stands on this and how the constituency of the world stands on this. Adam, Hawaita is with you, and if you don't mind, I'm not sure how the phone situation is. Hi, Hawaita, how are you?
I have the password, so hold on one second.
Okay.
Thank you for having
me. Oh, it's our pleasure, Adam. We will have you guys on always. You guys are just you're a wonderful, wonderful guest. Thank you for your work. As a Palestinian, I appreciate you both deeply.
Thank you very much. Okay, hold on one second.
Hello?
Hi, Hawaita, how are you?
Hello? Hi,
yes.
I'm good, how are you?
I'm great, hon. It's been a long time. Hawaita, you know, there are so many questions, but we have a question from one of our audience members. Mike in California would like to ask what I think is a very important question. And he asks, I am particularly interested in how both Adam and Hawaita deal with the possibility of either or both of them incurring physical harm during their work. Are they both worried about each other's safety during excursions such as the recent one to Gaza?
The last part of the question said during incursions, such as the last one on Gaza. Did I hear you right?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excursions. I apologize.
excursions.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Excursions.
Okay. Well, no doubt there is always a risk to our safety, but for me, I think the risk that we take as human beings working to make the world the kind of world that we want to live in and we want our children, and then the risk of not doing anything is far greater. And the risk and the violence that we know is carried out against the Palestinian people is 100 times worse than what we face if we're confronted by soldiers or, let's say, if we're arrested. We have been shot at. We have been in areas that have been, Israel has fired missiles on, etc. But this is a reality of everyday life for Palestinians, and we know that that's happening, and we feel that there is something possibly that we can do because of their connection to the United States or to the West, because of the fact that we can travel easier than Palestinians can, because we have foreign passports. So we feel that we have to do this. We can't just turn our back on what's happening. And the physical dangers that we're exposed to, I don't think are anything in comparison to the danger to our morale, psychological and well-being if we actually didn't do anything about it. So for me, I try not to think about it. I mean, it's always there. I don't think that we take any, what we do, let's say that's outrageous, it's not well thought out, that's not designed to, as much as possible, protect the well-being of the people that are carrying out this form of nonviolent direct action. But we do believe in nonviolent resistance as a strong method of resistance to confront occupation and oppression. And nobody says that it's nonviolent resistance is any safer than any other kind of resistance. And yet, for freedom, people have to resist, people have to struggle, and this is just our small way of contributing to the freedom struggle. So I actually, for me, I don't really think about it much.
Well, yeah, and Haweda, you as a Palestinian married to Adam Shapiro, a New York Jew, are a Palestinian American, but you're also a citizen of Israel and a Christian. Which you're kind of the, you know, you're really one of those people that sticks a thorn in their theory that, you know, it's only the Muslim extremists that are against the Israelis.
Yes, and that's one thing that we're trying to show, and that this is not a conflict about versus Jews or even Israelis, Palestinians versus Israelis. This is the dichotomy here is freedom versus occupation, and from the side of freedom, anyone can stand, whether you're Palestinian or otherwise. We've had people from so many different countries around the world join our movement from all different backgrounds, be it age, religion, socioeconomic backgrounds, professional backgrounds, and I think that that's the power of our movement, and that we're able to break down this false impression out there that Palestinians or Muslims are inherently against the existence of Israel or even against Jewish people in general. It's not that. It's just that they're being so brutally repressed. And when people find out the truth, they should bypass any kind of religious or ethnic lines. And I think for the most part, it does. Sadly, Israel is still able to put that it's, you know, Muslim terrorists against the Jews that just want to live in peace. But hopefully we're working slowly on exposing that is not. That is not the truth at all. If you just take the simple example of, you know, you're talking to Adam about our last mission on the boat, the Spirit of Humanity. I mean, we were boarded in this way. So basically sent out a huge naval force, as Adam mentioned, 8 warships in addition to the Zodiac that actually sent the soldiers to board our boats. And we were one 20-meter boat carrying 21 peace activists on board. We didn't constitute any kind of threat at all to Israel. But the fact that we were people from so backgrounds and coming to with a message to the Palestinian people that they are not alone makes it very dangerous to Israel, and they do need to stop that.
Shlomo Dror, a defense ministry spokesman for Israel, said, from my point of view, this is some kind of a pirate ship. You can demonstrate that's okay with us, but you're not allowed to break international law. Hawaii, if I'm not mistaken, it's Israel that's breaking the international law, or am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all, actually. The process that is imposing the blockade on the Gaza Strip, and this blockade extends out 20 miles into the sea from the shore of Gaza. But Israel occupies the Gaza Strip, and as an occupying power, they are responsible for the health and well-being of the people that they occupy. And therefore, they can't legally impose a blockade on this territory that they occupy, because a blockade is an act of war. You don't declare war on people that you're responsible for. And that's in addition to the fact that actually these blockade policies are seriously devastating the people. And they've had a dramatic effect in terms of the rise of anemia and other sicknesses, in terms of the rise of malnutrition. And so in more than one way, this blockade is illegal. And the fact that, you know, if Israel wanted to, because they control the territory, let's say they wanted to check our boats, or they wanted to control, they can control the entry of things into Gaza. But if what's coming in, or even what's going out, doesn't constitute a threat to the state of Israel or its armed forces under international law as an occupying power, they let it in to concern their security and also the border of the area, the territory that they occupy. But that's not what's happening. They're preventing a whole host of things, of items coming in, from food items. They don't allow baby formula in. They don't allow tea, coffee, and they don't allow pasta in. And that's even mentioned the medical items that they don't allow in, the cancer treatment, the oxygen, the anesthetics for the hospital, and so many other things. And so this is what it's turned into, is a form of collective punishment. They are collectively punishing the people because they don't like how the people voted. And collective punishment is strictly prohibited by the Fourth Geneva Convention, and it does constitute a war crime. And there hasn't been a single credible international humanitarian organization that hasn't said that. And we see the complete lack of will by governments and other big organizations to actually hold Israel accountable for it, to actually do something. So Israel is violating international law. Well, don't respect policies. Do something about it. And in a sense, that's what we're saying, is that if our governments are going to fail to act, we are going to act. There was absolutely no reason for, again, Israel to hijack our boats. We didn't constitute any kind of threat to Israel at all in terms of security. But they don't want people to have this kind of access to the outside world. They don't let the Palestinian people travel. Palestinian people of Gaza cannot leave and enter of their own free will. There's absolutely no freedom of movement. But over the past 3 years, almost 350 Palestinian patients have died just because they were, and it's not even as a result of military action by Israel. That's even separate. This is just as a result of not being able to travel to get the medical attention that you need, or not having access to home medicine that Israel has denied through the borders that it controls. So this kind of blockade, in addition to being a legal form of collective punishment, having a drastic, lethal effect on the people. And we're saying, you know, the international community has to stand up to it. We have to do something. And that's exactly what we did and what we plan to keep doing.
Let me ask you, Hawaida, in light of the attack, is Israel satisfied with the result of its heinous attack on Gaza?
Well, I can't speak for Israel. Of course, they tried to justify these policies. They'll point to certain things that, oh, well, look, the rate of attacks on Israeli territory has gone down. Is this a result of this brutal, you know, assault that they carried out on people? I can't really say. What I can say is, if they were really interested in controlling or in stopping the Palestinian rocket attacks into Israeli territory, then it wouldn't have been by launching this brutal assault. It would have been by renewing the ceasefire had with Hamas. And by their own record, it shows that they signed a ceasefire with Hamas in July of 2007. And if you even go on the Israeli Ministry of Defense, the Foreign Ministry website, you'll see charts that show the level of rocket attacks, how it drastically went down. It went down to, like, I think, 2 rocket attacks in the month of July. And therefore, as the Israeli Minister of Defense actually said this in a meeting of the Israeli cabinet. He said if this was really about stopping rocket attacks, then we would have renewed the ceasefire. But it's not what it's about. It's about breaking the Palestinian people so that their demands, the ceiling of what Palestinian people aspire for will be lowered, and Israel can hold on. It's right. We make things so bad for people. Things that used to be bad and unacceptable suddenly become okay or suddenly become a relief. For example, it used to be, I used to live, let's say, in Ramallah, and it was horrible. We couldn't enter Palestinians, couldn't enter Jerusalem, and that was bad. That we couldn't enter Jerusalem. And then, pretty soon it was instructed by that it was, we couldn't, Palestinians couldn't even leave their own homes because you'd have curfew. And then it was become even worse than that, that Palestinian neighborhoods were under fire and tank attack and aerial bombardment by Israel. So suddenly, when the aerial bombardment ends, oh, it's only curfew, you can't leave our home. Things are better today. The fact that we still can't go to Jerusalem, we still can't go to travel to other areas of the occupied territory. So in the sense, your feeling is lowered, and I think that that's what Israel's policies are designed to do.
Let me ask you something. I think this is a prominent question in the minds of anybody that is watching the current Obama administration. Obviously, we know how the Bush administration reacted to the events in Palestine, Gaza, and the occupation. Obama, good, bad, or indifferent?
Let's say he's showed a willingness to at least speak up against certain things that are illegal, have always been illegal, have always been contrary to U.S. policy, settlements and home demolitions. It's been U.S. policy to oppose settlements, which are illegal under international law, and yet other administrations have kind of turned a blind eye to them. The Obama administration has said that these are unacceptable. Israel has said, Benjamin Netanyahu said, Obama can't tell us what to do. We can't prevent, we're not going to, or it's possible to them to even think that they're going to prevent a Jew from anywhere in the world from living anywhere in the land of Israel that he or she wants. Now, is Obama really prepared to do something about it? Is he prepared to threaten to cut off U.S. aid? I mean, we give Israel over $3 billion just in military aid per year. This is not even counting the economic aid and the loans that are forgiven Israel. So that's always been the thing. I mean, you can talk, and so far his talk has been a little bit more for the administration, but the real test is, are you willing to hold Israel accountable for not, for continuing to violate not only these legal policies, but moral principles that, if you're Jewish, you can live anywhere you want. If you're Palestinian, you can't. In fact, if you're Palestinian, it's completely okay to kick you out of your house and to demolish your home so you can build a home for someone that's Jewish coming from Russia or coming from New York to live on your land. That's the kind of policy that we see Israel has been carrying out and has stated its intention to continue carrying out. So I'm still going to be optimistic as far as Obama is concerned. I'm going to continue to hold out. So we've only heard good talk, and we haven't necessarily seen us yet.
Well, again, the proof is in the Israeli pudding. I'm going to ask you something here, Huida. First of all, you know that there's been a lot of talk recently about a two-state solution and all of the above references. Part of the Netanyahu's position, of course, is that no return of refugees, no dismantling of settlements, no airspace, no water resources. What is different now with Netanyahu than was different when President Arafat said no to this very same deal?
Nothing except for the fact that they think, again, by continuing to try to break the Palestinians in this way, the Palestinians will eventually accept. I mean, before the next Palestinians, our position was we want a one state. Jews and Palestinians should be able to live together side by side without any discrimination based on race, religion, or ethnicity. In 1988, Chairman Arafat said, okay, we'll accept at least if you let us create a state on 22% of our original West Bank in Gaza. And the official position of the Palestine Liberation Organization has been that through today. More and more people now are realizing this is impossible. I mean, Israel has made the two-state solution absolutely impossible by, over the years, continuing to take over land, to build settlements, to demolish Palestinian property. And so what are you talking about? They're not going to be conceded. It's not going to be, the Palestinian state is not going to be conceded. It's not going to be viable. And so more and more Palestinians are saying, we need to go back to our original position in that this whole territory is important to Jews and Palestinians, and there's absolutely no reason why we can't live together. Why do you have to have separate laws for Jews and Palestinians? Why do you have to have a Jewish homeland when over 20% of the people that remain, forget about the indigenous people that were kicked out, but the people that remain there are not Jewish, and so inherently by being of the Jewish state for the Jewish people, you are relegating these people, which myself included, to second and third class citizenship, and you're denying millions of Palestinian refugees the right to come back to their home. So you're denying them the right to come back to the territory because they're not Jewish. Again, so we are seeing that we're willing to accept a state on 22% of our homeland. Israel has made that solution almost impossible. And it only makes sense these days to just ask for equality, to just ask to be treated just like Jews are treated in our ancestral homeland. And we don't think that that's too much to ask.
No, I don't think it's too much to ask at all. But obviously, it seems to be too much to ask of the Israelis. I think that's the key. Looking at it from the perspective of the majority of the human race, Israel obviously stands on the opposing side. Hawaita, let me ask you, recently Fatah, and I don't even know if the conference is over now, has had a conference in Bethlehem. And many believe that this actually has strengthened Mahmoud Abbas's position in the region. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, for the most part, I didn't follow their conference very closely. We have been busy traveling, building international support, and fundraising for our next mission. We are not willing to back down to Israel's violence, and so we are preparing a next mission to Gaza to break the siege. As far as Mahmoud Abbas's position, it depends on who you're looking for. Strengthen his position vis-a-vis the Palestinian people that he's supposed to represent. I don't think at all it has. With my friends and colleagues in the occupied territories in the West Bank are completely fed up, are completely disgusted with the fact that, you know, with the policies that are being carried out, with the way that Mahmoud Abbas is going, this is not to say that, let's say, Hamas has been any better. Actually, the Palestinian people are very tired of the fact that the people that are supposed to represent them, the leadership, are not even getting along, and are making the situation and our stance vis-a-vis the Israelis a lot more difficult. But they also kind of feel that there's nothing they can do right now. And this is dangerous. This is wrong. And this is what, international solidarity movements can help to change, and that we do have the power to make change. And sometimes our leaders go the wrong way, but we have an obligation to keep struggling for what we believe in. It's not only here what we believe in, but it's for our very survival. Most people, honestly, that I've talked to don't feel that Mahmoud Abbas has become any more legitimate. Maybe vis-a-vis Fatah, but not vis-a-vis the entire Palestine Liberation Organization or vis-a-vis the entire Palestinian National Movement. And that's, I think, what needs to be repaired. I don't have a particular strong position vis-a-vis Mahmoud Abbas, except that I don't feel, and I'm not saying that he is actually representing the will of his people. And this is what I hear from the other Palestinians.
Well, I know he does not represent a lot of the Palestinians that I associate with either. So we're very disturbed.
It's really a sad state of affairs. Sorry, I do think it's a sad state of affairs because with the advent of the alternative media and the fact that I do think I'm very optimistic about the fact that people are waking up what Israel's policies are about and people are willing to take action on a civil society level, willing to take action. So I think the international state solidarity movement with Palestinian has to strengthen, but the state of internal Palestinian politics and representation is not in a position to take advantage of that. And that, that weakens us. But as a Palestinian, very committed and who has come into contact with a lot of different Palestinians all over the world, from refugees to diaspora, people living in occupied territories within 1948 territories, we are not going to let even the state of internal affairs get us down. We will continue to campaign for our rights, and if Mahmoud Abbas, it looks like he's going to strike some kind of deal that doesn't guarantee us our basic freedom, we're not going to accept it.
Unfortunately, that's what I believe too is going to happen. But I'd be lying to you, Hawaida, if I thought I had expected anything different from Mahmoud Abbas right from the very beginning. I've never really been impressed with him, even when he was, with Arafat. He was almost benign in his efforts, and it's unfortunate that he was the elected leader. But let me ask you, I know that there's so much, we could go on for a lifetime discussing the different aspects of this, but what are you and Adam, what are your next projects? What are you working on? I know Adam is still working on his documentary, if I'm not mistaken.
He just finished up his documentary, his latest one, about the Palestinian refugee experience from 1948 until today. And that one took him to about 17 different countries, and he conducted interviews with over 250 Palestinians from all different kind of backgrounds that have all different experiences. And he is promoting it in terms of wanting really every Palestinian family, every Palestinian community to have a chance to see this, because this film really exposes Palestinians to the experience of other Palestinians, because as a result of the Israeli policies, we have been so kind of dispersed around the globe. We can't, in many cases, come into contact with each other. For example, as a Palestinian with Israeli citizens, technically I'm not allowed to be in the West Bank. I'm not allowed to be in Ramallah. I'm not allowed definitely to be in Gaza. Palestinians from Gaza can't go to the West Bank. Palestinian refugees can't go anywhere in the occupied territories. And so these policies have divided us. Sometimes we don't know enough about the other's experience. And so his film was meant to address that. And so, yeah, he's working on trying to get that film out as much as possible, to have one copy in the home of every Palestinian family around the world. As far as I'm concerned, and actually Adam's looking very close with me, right now we are determined to continue working on breaking the siege of Gaza. And it's not only about the siege of Gaza. It's about the power of the national civilian community to make change. And so after Gaza, we have to work on other areas of the occupation. But the situation in Gaza is so bad right now that we definitely believe this kind of collective action has got to be targeted here first, but we're not working on Gaza in isolation of other parts of Palestine and other aspects of the occupation. So right now, both of us are working on raising the funds and the political and social pressure necessary to carry out our next attempt to enter Gaza and to break this siege.
Well, I congratulate you both on your efforts, as usual. I mean, you're just a wealth of information as to what's going on in the West Bank and in Gaza. We support you as fully as we can, and we will be keeping tabs on how you're doing there. And I want to thank you and Adam for being well. Miriam is doing fine. I occasionally see her, too, just so you know, Hawaida. And we'll look for
you. Unfortunately, I don't get to see her or talk to her very much.
I know. We had trouble getting through to you guys tonight, and our producer called Miriam, and I said, well, I could have done that. I'm right here in Michigan. So, but we will give her your best. And
okay,
be safe.
Thank you very much.
Be safe, both of you, and be well and continue the good work. We are very proud of you, Hawaida, as a Palestinian Christian. I am very proud of my sister. Thank you, and I'm very proud of our adopted brother, Mr. Adam Shapiro. Thank you both so much, and be safe and be well. Our next week's guest, you're welcome. Next week's guest is Robert Allen Savage, our own Ken Kuoda, author of It Ends With Me. He will share a story on August 18th, next Tuesday. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. It's been a wonderful evening again. When the people speak, we make a difference. And Adam Shapiro and Hawaii Da'adaf are making a difference. Thank you very much.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of fast, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering, if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land.